Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Whisker Report. We're a podcast dedicated to helping anyone in the pet industry, whether you're in animal welfare or running a for-profit pet business. Get some PR visibility and buzz for what you do. Hello, everyone. I'm Mary Tan. I'm the host of the show. And we're joined also by our fabulous producer, Mark Winter of Pet Life Radio, who gets us to you each and every week. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hi, Mary. How's everything up there in the cold?
It's currently minus 28, below zero.
Oh.
Very, very cold. So I know we were talking about this earlier, but in Minnesota, we're not getting any snow with this big snowmageddon. We're recording this like the third week of January. So it's either snowing here or it's below zero. It usually doesn't snow and it can't go below zero. You can't have snow when it's this cold. So you get frostbite in about 5 minutes. So it's a quick potty for my dog, Freddie.
Not here. It's 76 and sunny.
He's in Fort Lauderdale, which couldn't be the more opposite end of the country. Oh, my gosh. Well, we are so honored to be part of Pet Life Radio. And you can do PR for yourself. And Mark and my colleague Alex and I are going to help you each and every single week. Well, I'm so excited. Our guest today is a powerhouse in the world of animal advocacy and storytelling, a 2025 inductee into the Dog Writers Association of America Hall of Fame. She has authored over 1,000 articles for outlets like the New York Times, Forbes, CNN, and Reader's Digest. Whether she's reporting on the front lines of pet rescue or diving into the science of the human-animal bond, her work is defined by a rare mix of journalistic rigor and deep compassion. Please welcome award-winning journalist and former DWAA president, Jen Reeder. Hey, Jen!
If I didn't love you before, I love you even more now. Thank you, Mary. You're the best.
Oh, my gosh. So a lot of people, you know, the average pet parent out there may not know you directly, but they probably have seen your byline. They probably read one of your articles. So let's start out by tell us a little bit about what you do and how you got into being a pet journalist.
Oh, sure. Well, it all started in 2010 when my husband and I adopted our first dog, Rio, a little Labrador Retriever mix who was in the Farmington Animal Shelter. And I became a crazy dog lady overnight and started narrowing my focus as a journalist to pets. And I grew up with cats. I also love cats, but Brian's violently allergic to them. So
It was nice to, yes.
So now, so I always say I go both ways, but at home I do only have dogs. So, but I do love kitties too. So yeah. And so it was everything from working for writing, you know, about like a local therapy dog program to help kids learn how to read to, you know, the latest science, veterinary health breakthroughs. And just, I'm a sucker for an inspirational rescue story of, you know, the grieving pit bull who, you know, then gave new life when his mom adopted a kitten and they became best friends. Like, I'm a sucker for all that stuff. So as we all are in the dog world and cat world, this is why we're here, right? It's not the money. It's the love.
Yeah. You know, as a former journalist myself, when I was in news, I was pretty much a crime reporter. So most of my news career, I never got to report on pets. And I always thought of people who could write about pets. That was like, you had the dream gig, right? Like you got to do all this cool stuff. I just did dead bodies all the time.
I remember you saying one time, if it bleeds, it leads.
Yes.
That was your whole thing. And you got sick of that.
Exactly. If it bleeds, it leads. Or if you're dead, I'm live.
I can see how that would get tiresome. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was your beginning journalism background?
I came to it a little bit sideways, but my husband and I were, you know, in our 20s doing a lot of traveling. So I was kind of sneaking in travel writing here and there. We did a couple of guidebooks, that kind of a thing. That's been a big reason why we never had pets was because, you know, we're backpacking in Southeast Asia for 4 months or we're going through Central and South America for 6 months, you know, that kind of a thing, and just all on a shoestring and spending no money. So it was a very different sort of focus. And then we like to say when we got Rio, he domesticated us. So sort of got real jobs and all those things. But yeah, I sort of came up in a small town called Durango in Southwest Colorado. I'd been freelancing for the daily newspaper there. And then one of my editors was leaving to start the cool alternative weekly, the Durango Telegraph. So I kind of moved with her, and I was their only full-time employee. So I was also, you know, selling ads and delivering papers and writing stories. And, you know, like, it was cuckoo, getting coffee. So, but it's flourishing now. But so everything sort of has gone from there. But I'm really happy to have gotten the beginning in, you know, newspapers, because you're used to kind of having to write quickly and develop connections in the community, and you figure out who the trustworthy sources are and like that. So, and then you also get nice tips from people of like, hey, that if I respect someone and they'll tell me like, hey, you should check out this organization, they're doing great things. So yeah. And then that's kind of expanded to now, you know, national stories for the pet world. So it's sort of the same model of getting tips from people and like relationships with you. I mean, just earlier this year, I wanted to do that, you know, a New Year's story about, you know, 5 ways to make your cat happier this year, and just contacted you like, hey, do you know any veterinarians? And you hooked me up with Dr. Randy Aronson, who gave a fantastic interview and was, couldn't have been nicer and more articulate and just fun and nice. So you know, there is that, like, hey, if this opportunity popped up, who do I know that I trust who will be responsive and give me a credible source? So thank you. One of many stories you've helped me with.
Oh, yeah. Jen, I love it when you reach out to me and say, hey, I'm looking for a vet. I'm looking for a cat person. I'm looking for a rescue. Because, you know, that's really, you're helping me with my bread and butter and what I do. So I wanted to start out by asking you, a lot of pet-focused writers and journalists tend to be freelance. So how, to all the rescues and small business owners there that are looking to get media, how does it work in your world? Like, you get a story idea. Is it you pitching a publication, or is it a publication reaching out to you and saying, I want you to write this, or is it both?
Both. I'm lucky to be at that point in my career where I have rapport with certain editors who will reach out like, hey, we've got this story idea. Do you want to write it? A lot of times then I have to find the sources. Most of the time I have to find the sources, but they will approach with something like that. But then also if I see something that I'm like, oh, this is a great idea, then I can pitch them. And then like I have a column for Just Labs magazine where I get to highlight Labrador retrievers and mixes helping make the world a better place. So a lot of service dogs and that kind of a thing. And so I do get to sort of pick those topics myself. And as long as a similar story hasn't run in the magazine in the past few years, I'm good to go. So it's kind of nice to have autonomy on that one. So yeah. So it is certainly a mix.
So, you know, it would be almost like in that case, the PR person's pitching to you and then you're pitching to the editor. It's like a double pitch.
Yes. Which is why sometimes someone will be like, hey, I've got this such and such that's going to happen tomorrow. You know, we're having a big pet adoption event tomorrow. It's like, I don't have time to pitch. I mean, my editor at the Today Show's website for years would sometimes be like, okay, let's go. Because we were doing sometimes 4 stories a week. So, you know, if she had a chance to get back to me, we could maybe cram it in. But most of the times, editors are so busy that it's going to take them a little while to get back to you. And so a longer lead time would help people pitching stories have a better chance of getting accepted. And also if I have like a deadline tomorrow that I'm frantically trying to get to, like, you got to give me more than 24 hours to pitch a story. Also, I'll sometimes research, like if it's a nonprofit that I've never heard of, I'm going to go to Charity Navigator. I'm going to go to Facebook. I'm going to do a quick Google to see if they've had any scandals. You know, I don't want to inadvertently promote an unscrupulous organization. So it's not like I'm just going to take your word for it and turn on a dime. You know, I'm going to kind of look into it as well. So yeah, a little more lead time.
Although my brain would be going to scandal.
I sometimes will get pitches from people who just have a bone to pick with someone at an organization, you know, and I don't know. I'm not interested in going into some petty back and forth. You know, I'm looking more for stories that are going to inform or inspire.
That is so awesome.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought of looking into Substack?
Something else to learn? I got no time. I've been in groups like the Society for Features Journalism has an active Substack group, and I joined it and then was totally inactive. And I know I should, and I should be smart about these things, but I'm sorry. That's a Slack group. See, this is me with the technology, Mary. I'm a dinosaur.
No, you're not. You know, speaking of which, I was going to talk about this later in the podcast, but since you mentioned the word dinosaur, in terms of AI, how are you dealing with that? And people, you know, AI is really stealing the content and the writing of journalists all over the world.
I'm a little more worried for content marketers who are doing listicles and things like that. I feel like so far it's been taking more of their jobs. Most reputable news organizations, like I just last year became the pets contributor for Forbes.com. And during my application process, they kind of grilled me about like, what's your take on AI? And I was like, I'm 53 and I'm not learning a new technology. These robots aren't writing my stuff. You know, so she's like, okay. We don't have to worry about you. You're in, you know. But no, most reputable news are all, I want to say, reputable news organizations. You cannot write any content. You can maybe use it for research, transcribing like a recorded interview. You know, I've heard some people are using it to help generate headlines, that kind of a thing. But no, I don't trust them. They're going to steal my stuff and train it and make it smarter and put me out of a job. I don't know. But I feel strongly that AI is never going to replace being able to interview a human being. And especially with a lot of, you know, you're talking to people about really personal issues, you know, and trying to almost, sometimes I feel like I'm a journalist therapist, you know, if someone's gone through a trauma, therapy dogs for Sandy Hook, or, you know, those kind of things. Like people are sometimes talking about really personal, a handler with a disability, like I want to be cool. And I think that that approach is not something that a machine is ever going to be able to replicate. And I think they're also not going to be able to organize thoughts in a way that can move a reader, I hope, as well as a human being could. So I'm more nervous just about the attacks on the media, quite frankly. I had been writing for a PBS site called Next Avenue, which was for readers over the age of 50. And when Congress rescinded all of the funding for NPR and PBS, they are folding. Everyone was laid off. They lost all their funding. It's based in the Twin Cities, actually. Your neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah.
Worse. You know, so I'm a little more nervous about budgets are being slashed as people put more money into podcast advertising or social media influencers. And, you know, it's not just print media. Legacy media isn't the only game in town anymore. So I think, budgets have gone like this. And so newspapers are folding. There are so many things to be worried about, Mary. What a fun talk this is turning into. I'm so sorry. Doom and gloom. Yay, 2026.
Yes. Well, you know that my editors and at several TV stations always used to say, fear and loathing, fear and loathing, fear and loathing. What do we have for, you know? And then when I worked in Las Vegas, the theme was sex, drugs, and rock and roll has to be in every newscast.
That one better.
So I have a question. A lot of people are writing their own press releases right now, and they're using AI.
Oh.
So I am 100% positive you've probably received some that were generated by AI. Can you tell?
I don't know. That's a good point. Yeah, I saw that some people are using them to write social media posts. Like, ew, come on now. Stand up for the human race. I don't know that I can. I like the ones that are not mass press releases, you know, where someone will send me like, hey, I saw that you wrote about this recently, so I thought you might be interested in this, you know, that shows they've done a little bit of human research into like who I am and
right.
What I do. If it's one of those mass press releases that goes out to a bunch of undisclosed recipients.
Yes.
And not as prone to respond, you know, whereas if it's a personalized thing, especially if it says, you know, exclusive offer to you, I will respond. Even if it's a pass, that's going to pique my interest. So yeah, that's interesting. I should be more paranoid. I have seen like sometimes on like Help a Reporter Out, Harrow.
Yes.
Or Quoted, places where you can put out requests for experts and try to get them very quickly. I've definitely, there's something where you can click like filter out AI responses, which I love. I always click that.
Really?
Yeah. I don't want those AI responses. So.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So, that's true. That's true. So that's something for your listeners. Like, you'll be filtered out if you respond with AI to a reporter request.
And you just dealt into something else. When I was a reporter for many years, I hated press releases. A lot of times, especially if it was from a for-profit company pitching a new product. I mean, I was in general news. I was in, you know, the mainstream local media TV news station. And like, we would delete a lot of those. But I've learned from being in this position now, they have their purpose, right? Because you have your pet trade media that all they do is new products and stuff. That's your niche. So you would rather get a personal pitch, and you've kind of said this already, but you'd rather get a personal pitch than a press release. Am I correct?
And if there's a press release at the bottom explaining more, sure, that's fine. Great, because then it'll have some of the statistic, you know, the details of, you know, I just got one about the puppy bowl and it's going to air on this and that and the other thing. But here are two dogs from our shelter who are going to be competing. Like, okay, yes, I want to learn more. And I also see like, oh, this is your seventh time going. I want to hear what it's like to have been there seven times. So I've heard people use press releases as a springboard to try to find something different. Like, oh man, I just saw a great journalist talking about, she got a press release for a blood bank for dogs.
And oh, wow.
She's like, this is kind of boring, but I want to find the dog in my town who has given the most blood. And so she sort of used the
yes.
press release instead of just using what they sent, you know, found more interesting and more personal and a more original take than just the mass thing that's sent out. So it can be a springboard. I'm not anti-press release. Yeah.
See, I know you've gotten press releases from, you know, you talked about focusing on what you do. I am sure you've probably gotten press releases that have nothing to do with what you do.
It's funny. I'm getting a lot on menopause right now. I'm like, no, they know about me. How is this getting out? I'm in the demographic. Actually, T.O.D. Anderson was like, you know what we should do? We should do a podcast called Menopause, P-A-W-F-S. She's getting stuff like that, too. We're not. But anyways. But no, you know, and then I'll just write back, you know, this sounds interesting, but I write about pets, so this is not a good fit for me, you know. And then sometimes people will be like, oh, that's cool. I also represent this pet company brand or something. And then it's like, okay, cool. I got one the other day that was like, didn't mention the source's name or if they were plugging a product. And so I wrote back like, just so you know, this is an instant delete. You know, but I saw it was like a young, it was somebody up and coming in the PR world. Like they're not a senior vice president or something. And you need to mention who it is so I can look up the person's name and if they're plugging a product. And, you know, it was not a good fit, but at least maybe she learned something. So I don't know. I try to be kind when it's.
You are exceptionally nice. Holy crap. Most people wouldn't even respond, or you get a nasty email, like in all caps saying, I don't write about pets.
Oh,
you know,
something
like that.
I'm a Colorado hippie, so I'm maybe a little nicer. But sometimes I can't respond to everything that comes in, you know, when I'm super slammed on a deadline, you know, like this is going to take me out of my brain right now. I need to focus.
Yeah. So I use services like Muckrack, Cision. And just so people know, there are these software programs where you can search for journalists by article, by topic. I looked you up and I could see the last, 20, 30 articles you wrote. So you can get a clear idea of how they write, what they like. And so it's a great way. And it's also, they have an email service where they can personalize it for you.
Well, interesting. I haven't. Yeah. Muckrack just does that automatically somehow. They've been like, hey, do you want to get a professional? You know, I don't know. There's some upgrade that you can do. And I haven't done that. I forget why. And I think it was somebody in the American Society of Journalists and Authors board was like, no, if you do that, then you have to keep it up. I don't know. There was some downside to maintaining it myself. So I just, and it's kind of fun. It'll be like, oh, that article got picked up by a station and for an NBC station in Philadelphia. Cool. Or, you know, oh, MSN ran that. Excellent.
Yeah. So I would suggest like those software programs depend on how big your agency is. So, you know, it can go anywhere from $5,000 to $35,000, you know, a year.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty high, but there's like seven or eight of them. And they also can Like, not only does it pick you and what you do and all the publications you've written and all your articles, but your social media comes up on a stream. So okay. We're spying on you, Jen.
I like it. Okay, fair enough. I'm glad I'm clean. Years ago, people will say to me, like, I love that you just don't wade into politics on your social media. And it's because years ago at a journalism conference, the editor for Modern Love at New York Times was like, you know, it's harder to get into Modern Love than Harvard, you know, statistically. But, you know, we get over tens of thousands of submissions. But the first thing we do when we find an essay that we maybe want to publish is we go to the social media site of the writers, and everyone in the room was. But yeah, like, you're supposed to be non-biased and present that front. So keep your personal views personal, kind of a deal.
Yes. So, well, I sort of feel that is, you know, you're a very traditional journalist, because the journalists I'm seeing today, I mean, it's so hard to find non-biased news organizations anymore. Like, if you're conservative, you're watching Fox News. If you're liberal, you're watching MS Now or CNN. But the problem is that there's nothing in the middle that truly says both sides. Now, I have found, much to my shock, the Wall Street Journal does a good job of covering both sides. And their headlines are never, it's always like, blah, blah, blah says this. I've noticed that their headlines try not to be inflammatory.
I like not inflammatory. Yeah, that's good. And I think the Associated Press and Reuters and, you know, BBC News, there's certainly, I mean, I'm going to go to CNN. I think that there are New York Times. I feel like people are working really hard to tell the truth. That's one of the problems right now. I mean, this could really devolve, but I'm not a publicist. I'm a journalist.
Right.
I'm trying. The whole thing is to find the truth and share it with the masses, basically. And when I've had so many people, even my mother-in-law was like, well, are you sure that you're quoting people correctly? I'm like, I record the conversations and I have transcripts of the interviews, you know, and you know, but she knows me. She knows I'm anyways.
You're a very credible person.
Thank you. I like to think so. We are on separate sides of the aisle, though, so maybe that could be something. But anyhow, I think when there's such an erosion of trust with all of the fake news and misinformation that's being spread by social media, that's why I really look for credible sources. If you're a veterinarian or a researcher at a university who's done a study, awesome. If you are, you know, a lawnmower company who just did a survey of 1,000 people and you're trying to tell me that this is like really important data, like, I'm sorry, this is not to the level that I'm looking for. And that actually happened recently. So yeah. Or I had someone who was a publicist for a vaccine company offer me a veterinarian who works for the vaccine company wanting me to talk about the importance of one of the shots. And it's like, I did right back to him too. Like, you have to understand, no editor is going to think, and no reader is also going to believe that, oh, you should get your vaccine because this guy who works for the vaccine company says so.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like, if it's an independent veterinarian or a veterinarian at a university talking about vaccines all day, every day, sure. But
right.
Anyhow, I think there's just this, you can't outfox the fox. What are you trying to pull a fast one on me for?
That's true. Well, we have to take a quick break because we got to try to raise money for this show so we can continue podcasting. Oh, yeah. If you're ever interested in advertising on just a plug, shameless plug here on the Whisker Report, just reach out to me or Mark. But we're going to be back in just a little bit and we're going to get the down and dirty on PR and reporters with Jen coming up.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He
could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell. She was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And we are back with the very lovely Jen Reeder, former president of the Dog Writers Association of America and a Hall of Fame member, and her cute little pooch, who's, you don't have this because this is the podcast, but his tongue is sticking out at me and Mark. But we love dogs, but we love cats too. So Jen, we want the down and dirty. What annoys you about PR people?
Ooh, I mean, it's amazing how many people call me Jan, first of all, when my email is literally jen@jenreeder.com. You know, people will still be like, hey, Jan. That's okay, though. That's okay. That's going to happen. But that happens strangely enough. I don't like when people offer to send me stuff because I'm not writing product reviews, for one thing, but also you're not supposed to bribe a journalist. Our rule of thumb is you can't accept anything more than the value of a cup of coffee. And I know that that's gotten very confusing. There's a lot of influencers and people who that's exactly what you want to do, but that's a line that I can't cross. I don't like when publicists are like, here's an influencer and you can ask them these 10 questions. No, I get to pick my questions, you know?
Yeah.
I've had people email me like, this dog is on death row, and if you don't write a story about him, he's going to be euthanized.
Yeah.
Don't put that on me. Like, editors are, there are thousands and thousands of animals in shelters, and the truth is people want, like, a happy adoption story that then will shine light on the good work that the shelter is doing and the overall need to adopt.
That's a really, really tricky one.
But yeah, emotional blackmail, not my favorite. You know, there was a woman who sent me a press release about, actually, it was a social media post that a friend shared about a pit bull who was really reactive and having a hard time. So the shelter got him a pink princess tent to help him feel safe. Like, I love that. You know, take a creative solution to trying to help an animal feel better. Yes, I'll do that. But not, it wasn't like, this dog's going to be killed if you don't write a story. So anyhow, that might just be me. But what else?
Hey, what about phone calls? Do you ever get phone calls?
Uh-huh.
Do you answer them?
Not anymore. I mean, now I'm missing calls from like my doctor because I'm assuming every call is faked. But back in the day when I had a landline. Yeah. And I sometimes people will be like, hey, do you have time for a 40-minute phone call?
Oh, my gosh.
Not really. Please just send me an email and I will respond if I'm interested, you know, kind of a thing. Or if I get an assignment, you know, if I send it to an editor and they like it, too. Yeah, no, phone calls. I don't like when people send me, like, DMs on Facebook. Facebook used to be, like, for fun with friends. And now I'm almost, like, scared to go on there because it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
What favor or pitch is waiting for me?
Yes. Yes.
And sometimes it's people doing favors to me. I'm not going to totally put it down. But yeah, I also don't love when people text to be like, hey, do you know when that story's going to run? One time I was in like Chile on vacation and if you had emailed me, you would get my out of office reply saying like, I'm in Patagonia. Please don't bother me. But so I feel like I wish there was an out of office reply for texts. And if there is, please let me know. But yeah, anyways.
So do you think the pitches are worse from the professional PR people sometimes? Are they pushier than say the pet store owner who's just trying to get a little coverage?
Yeah, I think sometimes the big companies are ignoring that something that a product being mentioned naturally in a story, if at all, will have a lot more resonance with readers than if it's just wedged in. I just had this. There's a big service dog organization who has a nice sponsorship from a pet food company. And they were trying to get
like everyone I interviewed for the story happened to mention how great that pet food is. It's like, okay, this is not ringing true. I'll maybe mention this once in the dog training section, but three people don't need to mention this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, I'm not interested in writing, you know, advertorials. You know,
yes.
I'm not writing ads. I'm trying to write actual informative news articles.
Yeah.
And features. So, yeah, no, that's a really good point. You're right about that. The big company. And it's like, are those big company execs actually reading articles and thinking, yes, that sounds natural when
these blatant plugs are wedged into things? Like, anyhow. Yes, exactly. Well, when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to find out Jen's final thoughts.
Want to know who the latest trendsetters are in Hollywood? How about Irish setters? Find out who's been spotted with Spot, chowing with her chow, and shopping for Gucci with their Poochie. Get the scoop on all the latest celebrity pet patter right here. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with Jen Reeder, our wonderful journalist who is on the show today to talk about everything dealing with PR people. So, Jen, you hit on something before about advertorials. And I feel like more and more, especially pet magazines, are going towards advertorials than having actual news content, if you know what I mean. Like, there's one magazine that is solely advertorials.
We'll talk after. I want to find out who that is so I can avoid them.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all written. If you read it, it comes across as a, you know, a pet parent magazine. But if you read it, everything is pitching whoever paid for that.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, you know, it's like, you know, the traditional magazines and the traditional, you know, print has just drastically changed. And so how are you pivoting to all of that?
Wow. A lot of people who I know are doing like a mix of journalism and content marketing, which I think advertorials would fall under the content marketing, where a brand is hiring you to write about a topic instead of a publication is hiring you to write independently about something. I am one of the idiots who is trying to cling to my integrity and my love of my job. So I have stupidly not done that. Every time there's like a six-figure freelancing webinar, you know, they're like, and don't just do journalism if you want to make six figures. I'm like, that stupid labor of love. So I'm still clinging to the editors and publications who are doing the traditional style and not being bought out. I'm grateful for that. I really love like Inside Your Dog's Mind and Inside Your Cat's Mind. You know, I think the editor also is a science writer, so she's very focused on how to really understand how to make a pet dog or cat's life better. But yeah, there are fewer. AKC Family Dog, I feel like, is not advertorial. I hope, oh God, don't tell me. But yeah, it's a lot of celebrating dogs. It's more purebred dogs than, I'm not doing rescue stories for them, but, you know, more service dogs for kids with disabilities and things like that. So I think there still are some print pubs, just labs. We're not doing advertorials. So they do exist. And if readers and subscribers seek out content that rings true and that doesn't seem like a blatant ad, that helps everybody. It's kind of like voting with your dollars.
Exactly. And it's pretty obvious. You can see all the listicles and the headlines, you know. So, well, anyways, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Your information was so valuable.
You're the best, Mary. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Jen. Well, that's a wrap for this episode of The Whisker Report. We're so excited to be doing this for all of you out there who are just working so hard every day trying to make life better for animals. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, reach out to us on Instagram or Facebook under Whisker Media, and we'll try to answer it in a future episode. So, as we always say, bark loud and purr smart. See you later.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.